The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. here at CNBC Global Headquarters. It is 10 a.m. in London, and this is Worldwide Exchange. Investors around the world still coming to grips with one of the boldest attacks by Iran on Israel in recent history. Global leaders this morning calling for a de-escalation of tensions while reaffirming their support for Jerusalem. On Wall Street, investors trying to pick up the pieces after the Dow's worst week in more than a year, and Mideast and inflation fears adding new layers of uncertainty. And all this as we continue to watch some wild moves in gold, oil, and crypto, with many searching for a safe haven ahead of what's set to be a very busy week for you and for your money. It's Monday, April the 15th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. We're coming to you live from CNBC London. Thank you so much for being here with us. Let's get you ready to start your day. We begin the morning with a look at U.S. stock futures. Bit of a rebound here on Wall Street. Green across the board. It looks like the Nasdaq would open up about 0.5% higher. The Dow looks like it would open up more than 100 points higher. This after what was a very rough session for stocks on Friday, with all the major averages falling more than 1%, and the Dow seeing its worst week since March of 2023. The S&P 500 coming off its worst week since October. But this morning, it's all about stabilization as we check the bond market and the 10-year yield still holding right above that 4.5% level. Right now, we're seeing the benchmark at 4.56. We'll continue to watch that throughout the show. We're also checking the oil market this morning under some pressure after an initial spike over the weekend as Iranian attacks unfolded. We'll talk much more about that later in the show. Elsewhere in commodities, gold, it continues to trade at all-time highs, and silver at its highest level since February of 2021. Taking a look, as we mentioned, gold trading at about $2,369 an ounce. We're also watching Bitcoin this morning. It fell below that $70,000 mark. We continue to watch the cryptocurrency making some wild moves. You can see the chart right there. Right now, trading at about $66,320, still up about 3%, but over the last week, falling more than 7%. All right, that's your morning money setup. Now we want to turn our attention back to Israel. And new developments this morning following Iran's unprecedented drone and missile strike over the weekend that saw the launch of more than 300 projectiles from Tehran and allied nations that included Yemen and Syria. This morning, the U.S. and other G7 officials, they're calling for a de-escalation of tensions while remaining very concerned that Israel may respond hastily and risk a wider regional conflict. NBC's Bree Jackson joins me now from Washington, D.C. with the very latest on this story. Bree, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. So a Biden administration official says the president told Prime Minister Netanyahu that the U.S. will not participate in any offensive operations against Iran and urged Israel to not retaliate.
President Biden condemning Iran's wave of strikes toward Israel and praising the U.S. airmen who shot down Iranian drones and missiles.
Hey, you guys are the best in the whole damn world, man.
The president met with G7 leaders Sunday and urged restraint as Israel considers its response.
We will take whatever it takes to protect and defend our people.
The 9,602nd meeting of the Security Council is called to order.
During an emergency United Nations Security Council meeting, the UN Secretary General called for a de-escalation of tensions.
Now is the time to defuse and de-escalate. Now is the time for maximum restraint.
There are growing concerns that Iran's attack over the weekend could trigger a wider war in the Middle East.
This is an escalating conflict.
And there are renewed calls from lawmakers and the Biden administration for Congress to pass a bipartisan aid package that stalled in the House.
The fact that the United States and Israel were cooperating, and this was in planning for weeks, shows that our commitment to Israel's security is ironclad.
get it on the floor, let's get it voted on, so that not only Israel can get additional resources to defend itself, which they clearly need, but that Ukraine can as well.
A vote on a national security spending package is expected this week.
And House Speaker Mike Johnson said details of a package are still being hammered out, but he says he will push for more funding for Israel. Frank?
All right, Bree Jackson live in D.C. Bree, thank you very much. Let's now turn our attention to our own Dan Murphy live in Dubai. Dan, tell us about the investor summit in the region as we continue to await a possible Israeli response.
Well, Frank, analysts I've spoken to today say Iran's attack was mostly symbolic, of course, aimed at showing deterrence without provoking an all-out war in the region. And that also explains the market reaction that we've seen today. Investors perhaps breathing a sigh of relief here from Tel Aviv to Abu Dhabi. We've seen Israel's equity benchmark actually rising steadily today. Stocks in Saudi Arabia and the UAE are also higher. Of course, looking at the primary market here, which is, of course, in the Middle East, the oil market. The attack didn't cause any disruption to oil supply or infrastructure, and the market fundamentals remain intact here. So the risk premium is being dialed back. Markets, of course, closely watching any escalation risk that could disrupt Iranian supply, though. And as a result, we've seen oil prices really cooling off here. In terms of some of the other market reaction that we've seen through the course of the Asia, Mid East and European trading day, well, gold is, of course, still bid, actually near a record high, with investors tapping into that safe haven trade. And in terms of what happens next, well, the primary focus for investors around the region and the world is what Israel is going to do, although the risk of contagion and escalation seems contained at this point. Of course, it all comes back to the response that we're likely to see from Israel's war cabinet and whether or not we see calm moving forward or major regional conflict. The latter seems less likely at this point, Frank.
All right, Dan, thank you very much for that report. All right, now we're going to turn our attention back to the market reaction, and Wall Street appearing to stabilize following Friday's sell-off. Again, as we mentioned, futures in the green, looks like the Dow would open up more than 100 points higher. But now over to the early trade over in Europe and over to Sylvia Amaro. Sylvia?
Yeah, actually, let me start with what we saw in Asia this morning, because it's a different story to what we're looking at in Europe today. So looking at how Asian equities ended the session today, it was, as you can see, mostly a negative picture over there. There's several dynamics there. First, I would like to highlight that when it comes to Chinese equities, the PBOC stated today that they were making essentially no change to their one-year MLF rate. Of course, that's an important one for the markets. But we are seeing quite a lot of negative momentum in Asia because, well, one of the reasons is the strong U.S. dollar. That's also putting pressure on the Nikkei 225, which ended the session down by about 0.7%. Worth keeping in mind that the dollar is trading at about a three-decade high compared to the Japanese yen. But bringing you back to Europe to show you how the narrative is slightly different, you can see that the majority of the bourses here in Europe are actually in the green this morning. We have, for instance, the CAC 40 up by about 0.6%, with stronger moves over in Germany and in Italy, with the market now up by about 1%. Now, there's a lot in the minds of investors today. We are monitoring, naturally, what's happening in the Middle East, so the geopolitical tension. There's also the narrative about higher rates for longer stateside. And of course, investors are also looking at the earnings season. I want to show you what's the breakdown when it comes to the sectors as well. The fact that we are seeing essentially lower moves on the oil price is also leading to the oil and gas sector being the worst performer at the stage, down by about 1.5%. We're also seeing shares of Shell and BP moving lower. But at the top, we have a bit of a more of a look to the defensive parts of the market, Frank, with industrials up by about 1.2%.
All right, Sylvia Amaro right here in London. Sylvia, thank you very much. All right, time now to discuss where the markets and where the economy, they both go from here. Joining me now, Stephen Whiting, Chief Investment Strategist and Chief Economist at Citi Global Wealth Investment. Stephen, good morning from London. I'm going to jump right into it. Give me your take on what we saw over the weekend, how you see it impacting the markets, and also, does it change your view when it comes to a portfolio, when it comes to defense stocks and also energy stocks, of course?
No, thank you. So look, if anyone's a little bit confused about market reaction, we have to bear in mind markets were looking at this event on Friday. There were significant warnings. We traded off hard. There was a drop in bond yields, a 1.5% drop in stock prices on Friday, largely because of this particular risk. As it unfolded, as the casualty count was extremely low, and as you heard someone already talk about this as a deterrent, the market reaction again is coming off. So the fact that it was timed on Saturday, if we were reacting to a new event, it would be different. I bear in mind a couple things. You know, we do not know exactly how wide this event will eventually be. So there are security risks. We would hold more oil and gas and generally more energy investments, whether that's alts, whether that's general energy suppliers, again, in a portfolio that we might otherwise, because of the security risk. We are seeing, again, production come down across OPEC, security risks across the East. But broadly speaking, we have to remember that economic growth and security risks and conflicts have coexisted for most of history, and that we shouldn't trample on a portfolio because of these sorts of portfolio, because of these types of security risks.
Fair point there, Stephen. I want to go to some of your research right now. You believe a rate cut is unlikely before July. UBS out with a note saying 89% chance of that cut coming in September. Kashkari out saying may not happen at all. A lot of this uncertainty has led to some twists and turns in the market. A lot of people going to tech for defense. Do you see that trend continuing this week?
Well, look, we were already in a market environment where markets were fading real, for lack of a better word, Goldilocks views of how the economy would unfold. We actually think we are on a path to disinflation. It was exaggerated. It was absorbed in the market as if it was going to be a very smooth path with stronger growth, lower interest rates at the same time. So it's natural for us to be giving some of that back. Now, again, how the market trades when we've traded up after 25% over the course of two quarters. Let's remember that nearly 40% of all months since World War II have been decline months for the U.S. equity market. We've had the best returns of the equity market of any asset class. So let's just bear in mind, we're giving back a little bit of that, but it has been really insignificant. A 2.5% drop in the S&P 500 at the quarter of a correction.
You know, speaking of giving back, Stephen, I want to point to the latest EPS estimates for Q1. We're going to show the audience the chart. It took a steep decline when it comes to the outlook on Friday. A lot of people believe that earnings are what it's going to take to keep this market afloat now that we don't have a really clear picture on rate cuts. So when we see earnings expectations drop like this, we're showing the audience right now from the beginning of the year. How does the market continue to move higher without strong earnings?
So this is really it. In the near term, we believe that the earnings estimates have been cut significantly too much. That when we tally up the quarter past, for example, it's going to be 6% higher than that level. It's going to make it easier for analysts who seem to have very rosy earnings expectations to actually maintain their full year gains. That these represent all-time record highs for U.S. corporate profits already. And we're not going to go anywhere but further gains in corporate profits for this year and very likely for next year. Now, we have to put a little risk premium around that, but this is a great environment for corporate profits in the United States. And therefore, you can see record high stock prices.
Stephen Whiting making the argument for optimism. Stephen, great to see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to turn our attention back to Washington and a news alert from the Biden administration. Christina Partsinevelis is standing by at CNBC HQ with much more. Christina, good morning.
Thank you, Frank. Good morning. Well, with a little help from the U.S. government, the world's biggest memory chip maker, Samsung, is now promising to spend more than $40 billion on manufacturing advanced logic chips here in America. That little help from the government comes in the form of $6.4 billion in CHIPS Act funding. The government aid will help build two leading-edge logic foundries, each the size of 11 football fields, with the first ready in 2026 versus TSMC's timeline of 2028, so Samsung's beating it. Samsung will also build a fab dedicated to research and development, a packaging facility, all of that in Taylor, Texas. And then they're also planning on expanding the plant already in Austin, Texas. The DOC, the Department of Commerce, promised 17,000 construction jobs and 4,500, quote, well-paid manufacturing jobs in Texas, all within the next 5 years. The Samsung award, though, is the latest in a series of handouts from the Biden administration to revitalize chip making in America. Often you'll hear many people say it's $53 billion, but really only $39 billion is for manufacturing grants, like these companies that you're seeing on your screen. Intel and TSMC on the left-hand side getting the highest awards, over $6 billion. That's already, if you add all of that up on your screen, that's already $27 billion allocated to firms in America, some which we know are not necessarily American, but all with the goal of bringing chip manufacturing back to America, and more specifically, making 20% of global advanced chips in the United States by the end of the decade. That is the goal by the Biden administration and the Department of Commerce, all while countering the technology rise in China. And we know China and many other countries are throwing a lot of money into their chips programs, too.
So, Christina, looking at the moves right now for the SMH, the SOXX ETFs, those chip ETFs moving higher in the pre-market. But what kind of impact are you expecting for rival Micron?
Micron is the notable competitor, and it's American. They still haven't received funding. So the big question is, are they going to be next? They have a plant in Boise, New York, as well. So they are anticipating funding. In terms of size, though, Samsung's bigger. They are larger when it comes to memory chips, so we're expecting something. But even just in the stock reaction, all of this was priced in. We knew that this was coming down the line just over the last few weeks. There were some leaks and stuff. So Samsung in South Korea not really reacting. Micron up higher. And the reason for that is that we just saw such a sell-off in chips last week. Arista Networks, Intel, onsemi, the worst tech performers just last week. Specific stories to those guys. There was an analyst downgrade for Arista. Intel, there's concern that China no longer wants to use Intel for chips in their products. But overall, you're starting to see a little bit of a rebound, just some buying after last week's sell-off.
All right, Christina Partsinevelis with the latest news for the U.S. CHIPS Act. For much more on this, don't miss a CNBC exclusive interview with Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo. That's coming up at 2 p.m. Eastern time. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we got a lot more ahead, including the one word that investors have to know today. Plus, banks coming off their worst sessions in a few weeks on a new warning from J.P. Morgan. Today, the earnings parade just rolls on with Goldman Sachs. We have the numbers that you need to know in just a moment. Plus, much more on the uncertainty in the Middle East, why energy traders may have already priced in some of the worst case scenarios. And then later, the safe haven trade within big tech that may face another big test this morning. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. A rough start to earnings season on Friday as J.P. Morgan reported lower net interest income in the first quarter, and the guidance had fell short of estimates. The stock dropping 6.5% for its worst one-day performance in nearly 4 years and was down more than 8% for the week. Citi and Wells Fargo also negative, but far less than J.P. Morgan. This morning, Goldman Sachs reports before the opening bell why it's expected to be solid thanks to the wealth management business and a revival in deal-making. The bank is dealing with several internal issues, including a stream of high-level executive departures. Let's bring in Hugh Sun, CNBC.com banking reporter, for much more on this report. Hugh, good morning. Great to have you. Great to see you from London. I'm going to jump into it. What are you expecting from this report? Looking at Goldman Sachs shares down about 1% in the pre-market. What are you expecting overall? What are you expecting about David Solomon's plans to make the asset and wealth management business the growth driver for this bank?
Yeah, so we're going to have to see a couple things from Goldman Sachs in the quarter. You know, as you pointed out, investment banking has seen a revival at JP Morgan and Citigroup, which reported on Friday. So if we don't see IB revenue up in the ballpark of 30 to 35%, perhaps exceeding expectations going into the quarter, that's going to be a problem for David Solomon. And as you mentioned, AWM, Asset and Wealth Management, this is supposed to be the growth engine after sort of the failure of the consumer banking efforts last year. You know, and they really need to hit their marks in terms of gathering a ton of new assets and seeing some showing some momentum in the private credit area. And if he does those two things, they're going to be okay. I think the bigger issue is, you know, the sell-off last week in bank stocks. This is a little bit to do with a J.P. Morgan CEO, Jamie Dimon, you know, call that inflation is going to be tougher this year, and perhaps the cuts that everybody expects are going to be pushed a little bit further out. And if that happens, that's not good for CEO confidence. And if CEO confidence is not good, Frank, you're going to have an issue with the mergers and the debt and equity issuance that people want to see. That's really going to help Goldman Sachs.
Okay. So you mentioned that David Solomon's facing a few issues. One of those is some pushback to his pay package. Another one of them is brain drain, as we just mentioned, some top people there at Goldman leaving the company. How big of an issue is that really for investors compared to another thing like the fact that the rate cut picture has changed dramatically? In your notes, you point out when we first thought we were getting 6, maybe 7 rate cuts, Goldman Sachs stock took off. But since that picture's changed, the stock's pretty much flat since then.
Yeah. Back in November, when it was all, you know, all things were go and everything was up and to the right, you know, Goldman Sachs, they climbed by about 50%. So I think people underappreciate how linked they are to the rate picture. And by the way, you know, that stock performance, and they hit a 52-week high just last month. That stock performance was, despite this continued brain drain. I think the brain drain is a bad story for David Solomon, no doubt, but that, you know, the performance of the company is what really matters. And if that holds, they're going to be okay. I think the problem is if you see in the results in the next over the next year, and to call it a make or break year is probably hyperbole, but it's, you know, somewhat true. If you see that there's any kind of decline in their leading Wall Street businesses in trading and investment banking versus the other banks, then you could actually say that the brain drain has actually hurt them relative to J.P. Morgan, relative to Morgan Stanley. If they continue to perform, it'll be okay. And, you know, look, there's plenty of bodies in the graveyard. There's a bench of talent at Goldman Sachs that can always continue to climb up, and they'll be okay, Frank.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Goldman Sachs reports before the opening bell. Hugh Sun, always great to see you. Thank you for your time and for your insight. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, a merger Monday in big tech and your top corporate stories. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up right after this.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Let's get a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Our Pippa Stevens is at CNBC headquarters with those. Pippa, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Frank. Well, Apple is facing fresh challenges in the smartphone market. New data from IDC showing iPhone shipments fell 9.6% in the first 3 months this year from a year ago. IDC says Samsung was able to take Apple's place as the leading global smartphone supplier during that period. Apple has experienced a slump in iPhone sales in China. The data coming as CEO Tim Cook kicks off a 2-day visit to key manufacturing hub Vietnam, which includes meeting with local suppliers. A potential merger Monday taking shape with multiple reports that Salesforce is in advanced talks to buy Informatica. One potential hurdle, according to the Wall Street Journal, the price that was being discussed is below Informatica's Friday closing stock price of $38.48 per share as a result of its more than 40% jump so far this year. And Electrek reporting Tesla employees say they're preparing for layoffs. The report says the report cites employees who say that rumors are making the rounds of layoffs of up to 20%. The potential move comes after the company apparently told Texas Gigafactory workers recently that Cybertruck production shifts would be shortened. Frank?
Pippa Stevens, thank you very much. Live at CNBC HQ. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, tech coming off its third down week in a row, but is this the latest wave of uncertainty or a buying opportunity for some sky-high names? We've got Wedbush's Dan Ives and Hightower's Stephanie Link coming up next to answer those questions and much, much more. Stick with us. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Holland, coming to you from CNBC London. Futures, they are higher this morning following Iran's unprecedented drone and missile strike over the weekend on Israel that saw the launch of more than 300 projectiles from Tehran and allied nations, including Yemen and Syria. This morning, the U.S. and other G7 officials are calling for a de-escalation of tensions while remaining concerned that Israel may respond hastily and risk a wider regional conflict. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, speaking with leaders from Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan about this attack, reiterating that the U.S. will continue to support Israel and it does not want an escalation in the region. So on the back of those developments, let's get a check on the markets and the U.S. stock futures. As we mentioned, in the green across the board. However, taking a look at the Dow off of its highs of earlier this morning, earlier was up, at least in the pre-market, over 100 points, right now at about 79. All right, this after what was a very rough session for stocks Friday, with all the major averages falling more than 1%, and the Dow seeing its worst week since March of 2023. We also want to get a look at the bond market, and the 10-year yield still holding just above that 4.5% level. Right now, looking at the benchmark at 4.55. We're also checking the oil market this morning, under some pressure this morning after an initial spike over the weekend as the Iranian attacks unfolded. Had Amrita Sen from Energy Aspects here in Europe. She said this was essentially a buy the rumor, sell the news event, but she continues to watch the oil market for further developments. Looking at commodities more broadly, looking at gold, it continues to trade at all-time highs, and silver at its highest level since February of 2021. Right now, we are seeing gold just pull back just a bit. Silver just fractionally higher right now. All right, turning our attention back to the broader markets. Tech leading the charge lower in Friday's session with the Nasdaq's more than 1.5% drop, pushing it into negative territory for the week. That marks the first time it's had three straight negative weeks since late October. The three worst performing tech stocks Friday included Arista down 8.5%, onsemi down just over 5.5%, and Intel falling more than 5%. But it wasn't all doom and gloom. Apple finishing Friday in the green as the top performing tech company and gaining more than 4% for the week. Best week since November for Apple. Joining me now on this and much more is Stephanie Link, Hightower Chief Investment Strategist and a CNBC contributor, as well as Dan Ives, Wedbush Security Managing Director of Equity Research. Good morning from London to both of you. Dan, I'm going to start off with you.
Good morning.
Give us a sense. What did you see? How did you see the action that we saw in the tech sector last week? How do you see investors, or how do you believe that investors should play it going forward?
I think it's nervousness just given the overall market, geopolitical, you know, and everything going on with the 10-year. Look, I think it's a get out the popcorn moment. I think this is going to be a robust tech earnings season next few weeks. We view this more of a golden buying opportunity, given what we see in cybersecurity, the AI revolution, and digital marketing and advertising that's trending ahead of expectations. And that's our view. This is not the time to run. It's actually the time to own the winners.
All right. So Dan Ives is bullish right now on tech, saying this is a buying opportunity. Steph, how do you see all this? I mean, we got earnings season coming up. We're seeing earnings expectations continue to fall. Right now, how do you view the action that we saw in the market last week? As someone who obviously advises clients, how are you advising people to play the markets this week?
I think it's pretty remarkable, Frank, that we're only down 2.5% from all-time highs in the S&P 500. And in the past 16 months, we're up 33%. We've had to deal with hotter inflation, an unknown Fed, bank earnings on Friday, which weren't great. But I don't think, by the way, they were as bad as they reacted. But nevertheless, it wasn't good. And we have the geopolitical issues. I think the reason we're bouncing back today is because Israel was actually pretty successful in terms of shooting down 99% of the missiles and drones that came at them. We don't know what their game plan is, and I think that's the reason we're going to stay volatile. But I want to step back for half a second and say, why exactly is inflation hotter than expected? Inflation is hotter than expected because we've had an unprecedented amount of fiscal stimulus in the system for the past 4 years, and that is acting as a nice tailwind for the economy. We're growing above trend, and that will lead to better than expected earnings. And I agree that with Dan, that technology earnings will be good. But the thing is, other sectors' earnings will be good. And some of those sectors have really, you know, fallen by the wayside. And I think there's your opportunity.
All right. So you're saying earnings are going to be good, Steph. But I mean, looking at communication services, the estimate is for it to be basically 29% higher year over year. Basically tech 21% higher year over year. Do you think it can live up to those lofty expectations, even as we more broadly see earnings expectations decline?
I think you're going to see 8 to 10% growth in the S&P 500. I think technology will actually deliver, but they are overowned and there are higher expectations than something like energy, which should see growth in earnings. We should see industrials do very well, 15 to 20% organic growth, free cash flow. And I think you're also going to see good numbers in the materials and in some of the discretionary. I'm most excited this week, actually, for D.R. Horton to report, because I think housing is on the mend. And I think that's a place where you want to be investing as well.
All right, Dan, I'm going to come over to you. Obviously, again, earnings season's kicking off. You're looking at the cybersecurity sector for opportunities, but it's kind of a head scratcher. Ever since Palo Alto Networks reported back in February, the entire cyber sector has taken a pretty steep decline. Do you believe that's going to see a turnaround during earnings season? I mean, why would you want to buy cybersecurity stocks right now when they've been under so much pressure?
Yeah, look, I think this is the massive disconnect. I think this is going to be a turnaround for the ages. For cybersecurity, Zscaler, CrowdStrike, we're actually strong buyers of Palo Alto here in terms of the transformation they're making. And right now, I think this is going to be one of the biggest subsectors of tech, especially as you have all.
But what are you saying that the market's not seeing, Dan?
Because everyone's taking what happened with Palo as ultimately just the start of a shot across the bow negative. We see the opposite, which is why right now, Frank, this is a pound the table time on cybersecurity, in our opinion, and that's how we're hand-holding investors through it.
All right, so you're hand-holding investors through it. Steph, I want to come back to you. Something you've been looking at is the money and money market funds. You know, right now, according to ICI, there's about $6 trillion in there, but in April, about $31 billion came out of those money market funds. How do you see that impacting tech investing, but just the markets overall?
You know what's interesting, Frank, is Larry Fink of BlackRock on Friday said that there was $9 trillion in money market numbers. So he must have the most updated figures, because I actually also thought it was about $6 trillion. Well, it doesn't even matter. Six or nine, there's a heck of a lot of money on the sidelines. That, okay, I get it. It's getting 4 or 5% in interest, so you can sleep well at night. But you're going to get much more in terms of total returns in the S&P 500. And that's actually also what Schwab, their management team, has said. They look at cash balances on a month-to-month basis, and those numbers have been coming out of money markets and cash on the sidelines going into the S&P 500 because there's this fear of missing out. And if I'm right, and we have better-than-expected earnings, and we have a broadening out in earnings, that's all the more reason why you do want to be buying in on these dips.
All right, Dan, I'm going to give you last word. I know you're bullish on cybersecurity. Give us your other top picks for right now.
Yeah, so overall, look, we'd be Microsoft to me from a cloud perspective. These are going to be jaw-dropper numbers in terms of what we see there. Google's another one. Some of the parts, AI could add $30 to $40 per share. And then overall, when you look at the AI revolution, it's Palantir, front and center. In terms of the use cases, this is just the start of a 1995 moment. I think tech leg higher. We see 15% up the rest of the year.
Yeah, and your notes also see that you like Salesforce. Quick take on that Informatica report that they're possibly looking to acquire Informatica.
Oh, we would loudly applaud that. That would be a no-brainer. I think Benioff right now is on the offensive, and I think this is exactly what you want to see from the tactician. Gaining more and more share. This would be an acquisition. I think the street would cheer.
All right, we got to leave the conversation there. Stephanie Link, Dan Ives, always great to see both of you. As always, thank you for your time and for your insight. Have a great day.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, much more on the escalating Mideast tensions and whether further violence between Israel and Iran could push crude above $100 a barrel. Worldwide Exchange, we're coming back in just a moment. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Oil prices are falling today as traders dial back risk premiums following Iran's drone and missile retaliatory attack on Israel over the weekend. That caused limited damage, and right now investors are trying to assess the possible fallout from that incident. WTI and Brent crude taking a look right now, both down just right around 1%. Pippa Stevens joins us now with much more on what may be playing out in the energy markets. Pippa, good morning again.
Hey, Frank. Well, we're not seeing a huge response in the oil markets, with traders chalking it up to the fact that Iran telegraphed the attack was coming, indicating the country doesn't want full-out war. Or as, again, Capital's John Kilduff put it, Iran's move was a, quote, face-saving exercise well-planned to make a statement without engendering further conflict with Israel. What's key here is how Israel responds, since that could ultimately determine whether the conflict is contained for now or escalates. City out with a note this morning saying that Iran's attack was already priced in, but an Israeli response is not. Now, oil prices have ticked higher in recent weeks and are now hovering around a five-month high. And with Brent crude sitting above $90, that does complicate the Federal Reserve's fight against inflation. It is, though, supportive for the energy sector, which is hovering around an all-time high. Exxon and Diamondback touching records on Friday, with Conoco, EOG, Marathon Oil, and Oxy all hitting multi-year highs. Frank?
Pippa, thank you very much. Let's get more insight now on the action that we're seeing in the energy markets. Rebecca Babin is a senior energy trader at CIBC Private Wealth. Rebecca, good morning from London. I'm going to jump right into it. As we can see, the oil markets are pulling back a bit this morning. Pippa just mentioned a city note that said it was already priced in. I was here with Amrita Sen from Energy Aspects saying something very similar here in Europe. What's your take on what we're seeing?
So I would agree with that statement. And the way that I come to that conclusion isn't just in the price action we're seeing today, but the lead up that we saw last week. The rise in crude actually wasn't that extreme last week, but if you look under the surface, what you saw was exploding call option volume, which told me investors were very much positioning for this tail event. We saw options trade 90, 95, 100, 110, 120. And in what investors were telling us is we don't necessarily think crude is going to explode higher on this event, but in case it does, and in case this does escalate, we want to have that tail hedged. Now that this is unfolded and there's a little bit more clarity, and clearly there's a lot to learn here, I think we might be seeing some unwinding of those tail hedges that were put on as the path to seeing a supply disruption in crude, which is different than further escalation, is not as likely as some had feared.
Okay. So I want to get an explanation from you. We keep saying that the risk premium in the energy market declined after this. But just last week, the IEA came out with a report citing escalating oil supply security concerns. You've mentioned the word escalating several times. Why isn't that risk premium higher, considering that this event could, you know, extend to something much broader? And we still don't know what Israel is going to do in response, or if they will do something in response at all.
So I think there's two answers to that question. The first is that we have a tremendous amount of spare capacity from OPEC and OPEC Plus sitting on the sidelines, which is providing an exceptional amount of buffer to the upside risk premium being priced in. Right now, OPEC Plus has 5 million barrels plus of spare capacity that it can bring back if needed to offset a price spike. And my thoughts are that they are likely to bring that back in the event that crude gets towards $100 a barrel, because their long-term objective, although they like higher prices, is not to see a spike. They want consistent, non-volatile markets in order to contain these prices and maintain their control over the market.
So, Rebecca, I want to ask you, in your notes here, you say that any sell-off where Brent gets down to $80 a barrel, WTI gets down to $75, that would be a buying opportunity, but wouldn't that signal weak demand if we see prices fall there that low?
I actually think we could see prices fall to those levels if we get a ceasefire and we get a true de-escalation. I think that's how much risk premium is actually kind of priced into the market at this point. So I think fundamentally, if we're looking at, you know, kind of $80 Brent, that's where the fundamentals really start to look solid and where crude is supported. So that's an obvious amount of massive amount of de-escalation that would come following what Israel decides to do. And I think that's truly where the buying opportunity exists. Supply and demand does look strong, but it doesn't look strong enough to support Brent at 90.
All right, Rebecca Babin, great to see you. Thank you for your time. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, Mideast violence adding to Wall Street's already lengthy wall of worry. We're going to tee up a critical trading week and what you need to watch starting today. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It is time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start with President Biden urging Israel to show restraint after Iran's unprecedented drone and missile attack as D.C. looks to cool Middle East tensions and reduce the risk of a full-blown regional war. Israel's war cabinet is set to reconvene in just about an hour from now over a possible response. Back in Washington, the attacks on Israel giving House Speaker Mike Johnson new urgency to try to advance wartime aid for Israel and funding for Ukraine. Johnson says he hopes to advance the measure as soon as this week. The Biden administration plans to award Samsung Electronics as much as $6.4 billion in grants to increase chip production in Texas as part of U.S. efforts to bolster domestic semiconductor manufacturing. This is the third largest CHIPS Act award to date. The IDC says iPhone shipments fell nearly 10% last quarter, the sharpest decline of the top five smartphone brands. Samsung has now regained the top spot. And Salesforce is reportedly in talks to buy Informatica below its current share price. Informatica is currently valued at about $11 billion following its 40% rally this year. And there are reports that Tesla employees are worried about layoffs, which could come as soon as this week. Potentially impacted factories include Austin, Texas, and Fremont, California. All right, turning back to the trading day ahead, markets are looking to rebound from the Dow's worst week of the year. Taking a look at futures right now, we're looking at the Dow. It looks like it would open just about 90 points higher, still off of its highs of earlier today. The Nasdaq up just about 0.5%. Joining me now to discuss is Amy Wu Silverman, head of derivative strategy at RBC Capital Markets. Amy, good morning from London. Let's just jump right into it. How do you see today shaping up? What's your WEX word of the day?
Good morning, Frank, or I guess good afternoon to you. My WEX word of the day is awaken. And what I mean by that is, look, the left tail, I know you were just speaking about it with Rebecca Babin, the left tail is waking up. The demand for hedges is waking up. And although I think right now futures are pricing probably an okay open, the fact that that is ticking up, I think, just shows this underlying concern that is finally happening in the market.
So you say it's kind of ticking up right now. I was actually speaking to Anna Catrion from Van Lanschot Kempen. I got to make sure I say that right. One of the biggest investment banks here in Holland. She said something similar. And in fact, she said the downside protection is relatively cheap. What does that tell us about investor confidence?
So this is so interesting to me because, you know, I think everyone knows at this point that hedging the price of protection has been really cheap to almost historical levels. And people ask, why is that when you feel this kind of general angst from geopolitics? The simple answer, Frank, is it just hasn't worked. It hasn't worked to hedge these last few years. People are much more focused on the FOMO, on the MOMO. The one difference now, I think the one part of the inflection point is a lot of people have jumped in the pool. So when you have positioning getting more long, there's just simply more to protect. That's why I think you're waking up, especially ahead of a critical week of earnings.
All right. So I know you're also focused on some of the unknown unknowns. Of course, Israel Hamas and now Israel Iran is one of those unknown unknowns. And also interest rates and the real impact of AI on earnings. I'm going to throw that into your bucket. So how is it, as someone who advises clients, how do you tell people to try to figure out these unknown unknowns?
Yeah, you know, I think you look to the options market sentiment because a lot of it provides as leading indicator. Give IA an example, for instance. You know, this is a place where we just saw so much reach for upside to really historic levels, not just in Mag 7, but I would say also on the adjacent names where AI could come to play. Another inflection point, Frank, that points to the same idea of maybe that left tail awakening is the fact that we've seen exuberance really decline in the AI sphere when you look at those options that call. Bid has really waned. You know, it's not gone completely away, but especially as we head into earnings, there's going to be more idiosyncratic and fundamental risk coming to the market. The fact that it's waned along the left tail picking up to me is very interesting.
All right. One other thing I want to ask you about options, bets and algorithms playing a role in Friday's sell-off. How big of a role do you believe that played?
You know, the options are always the first and last sphere to be blamed. And what I always say is, you know, it could somehow be the tail that wags the dog, but it's never the fundamental reason. There's always sort of a fundamental idea. And then this is always an exacerbating circumstance. You always see that with the gamma positioning in the market, especially around expiration, of course, but it's never fully the only reason.
But would you attribute that to some of the downside we've seen when it comes to tech? Do you think that's one of the main reasons?
I think actually tech, yes. And the reason is because it has been exacerbating that upside. When that call bid happens, you do see, you know, dealers essentially forced to buy more shares to hedge that upside. So when that wanes, Frank, I think the opposite happens too. You take away a lot of that demand. So I do think that contributes to it on the margin.
Amy Wu Silverman, always great to see you. Thank you very much. That's going to do it for us. As we mentioned, futures in the green. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.